be here with our allies in the fight for affordable health care.
I'm Andy Seaton, KBOO News.
For KBOO in Portland, I'm Julie Sabatier.
KBOO's Afifa Ahmed Shafi reports.
I'm Stephanie Potter, KBOO News.
KBOO's Eduardo de Landeros Tiede has more.
I'm Annalisa Hummel.
And I'm Liam Delta.
This is Maddie Bowden.
I'm Alex Collins, KBOO News.
I'm Michael Newman, KBOO News.
I'm Courtney Dillard, KBOO News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, British Home Secretary threatens Al Jazeera. Kulongoski offers an ambitious education plan, but at what price? Hole in the ozone layer is said to be the largest recorded.
And in the human cost of occupation in Iraq, as of today, there have been 2,788 officially acknowledged deaths of U.S. soldiers. IraqBodyCount.org reports as many as 48,000 civilians have been reported killed by military intervention in Iraq, and a new report released by The Lancet puts the number at more than 600,000 civilians dead.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Friday, October 20th, 2006. 18 days until the 2006 midterm elections. I'm Liam Delta.
And I'm Annalisa Hummel. The FBI is offering a reward of up to $5,000 for information leading to the arrest of those responsible for an arson attack at the Dashmesh Darbar Sikh temple in Salem. The attack happened on July 22nd and is considered a hate crime because investigators believe the person or people involved targeted the building and grounds because of religious nature. The FBI and Salem Police Department are investigating the case jointly. Anyone with information about this hate crime is asked to call the Salem Police Department's hotline. Liam.
In campaign literature, in speeches, and on his website, Governor Ted Kulongoski has doggedly pushed his proposal to dedicate 61% of the state's budget to education, to pay for everything from expanding pre-kindergarten availability to lowering the cost of college tuition. The plan, called the Education Enterprise by the governor's office, could mean a substantive raise in education money. The proposal has drawn questions from Republicans about the other 39%, such as the human services, public safety, economic development, and natural resources needs that all need to be funded by what's left in the budget. Kulongoski's chief of staff, Pat Egan, said the governor is putting the state's money where his mouth is, backing up his contention that education is his top priority and absolutely central to the state's future. "We're not robbing Peter to pay Paul," Egan said. "We are maintaining services."
Local Oregon hospitals will banish those choking black clouds of smoke that puff from diesel engines under a first-of-its-kind program to help clean up one of the most serious pollutants in local skies. Leaders of the area's four major hospital systems said Monday that they would expand their use of cleaner diesel fuel and install control equipment on their vehicles and direct their suppliers to do the same. At the same time, Portland officials announced that the city will require all residential garbage and recycling trucks to burn a biodiesel fuel blend that generates less pollution and greenhouse gas. Diesel pollution exceeds healthy levels throughout the metro area, posing an average cancer risk 14 times higher than is considered safe, according to an analysis by the Oregon Department of Environmental Quality.
Oregon State University researchers are fine-tuning a purple tomato. The skin is as dark as an eggplant. But it doesn't just look cool, it could be better for you. The pigment contains the same phytochemical found in blueberries that's thought to reduce the risk of cancer and heart disease. 6 years in the making, the purple hybrid could hit salad plates in 2 years. The purple tomato traces its roots to a wild species in South America, not a Petri dish, so genetic origins are not an issue. Jim Myers, the Oregon State professor overseeing the project, said he doesn't see it changing the world, but it may entice gardeners and commercial growers to try it.
Okay, now almost 5 minutes after 5 o'clock, we're going to membership central to ask you to become a member of KBOO Community Radio. And please make a pledge by calling 503-232-8818 or 877-500-KBOO. And now over to Membership Central.
And this is Noah Eaton, assistant producer for tonight's broadcast. I'd like you to get on the phone right away and call 503-232-8818. Or if you live outside the City of Roses, 1-877-500-KABU. And now we have a good friend of mine, you know, back there in Membership Central, or as Lisa likes to call it, the Palace of Pledge, who wants to tell you more about how you can help out.
Actually, I want to tell you how you can dress for the evening. For just a small pledge to KABU, you can get a fantastic KABU t-shirt. My name is Carol Scholl. I'm the host of one of the hosts of Bread and Roses at 6 to 7 o'clock on Friday evenings. And what we're looking for is help reaching our $300 goal for this program, the news program. And I want to add a little bonus. If you get a thank you gift, if you make like $10 a month pledge, $10 monthly deduction from your checking account, you can get that wonderful KABU t-shirt by calling in to 503-232-8818. And if you're out driving outside, you're way down 84 on in the gorge, you want to call in at 1-877-500-5266. Again, 503-232-8818 is the number to call to get the fancy KABU t-shirt for just I think it's $75 minimum pledge. $75 pledge is just 21 cents a day. And you can stop by here if you're in the area and pick that up, drop off your pledge, fill out the pledge form, and get dressed for the evening. It's just wonderful to tune in every Friday evening to KABU to hear the news program, the great volunteers coming in here and spending their Friday evenings reading all that news to you. So it's just great. I'm joined now with Marlene Howell, host of nothing,
but I fill in once in a while. Hello, everybody. And look, let's just cut to the chase. If you want this kind of news to stay on the air, we got to get your help. It's 503-232-8818. 1-877-500-KBOO.
You know, Marlene, I was saying this is a great way to start the weekend, too. If you're feeling like pretty depressed about the news you're hearing on KABU tonight and thinking you definitely want to make a difference, well, just give us a call, 503-232-8818.
And you know, listeners, at Pledge Drive, we do take a look at which shows draw the most number of pledges, not necessarily the overall monetary amount, but who is calling in at what shows, who's interested, what draws people's attention. And when the news doesn't get many calls, it gives us the feeling that perhaps the listeners of the news don't really care if we have news or not. I don't think that's true. I think news and public affairs is one of the reasons people stay tuned to KABU and become members at KABU. So if that's the truth for you, would you give us a call now and put some membership behind your interest at 503-232-8818 or 1-877-500-KBOO, or if you have access to the web at www.kboo.fm, click on Join Now.
And what's coming up after the KABU news will be the counterspin, and we will be offering as a pledge thank you gift the book by Jeff Cohen, who is the founder of Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting, the organization that puts out Counterspin, which we broadcast at 5:30 every single Friday.
And you know, folks, we have lots of ways to say thank you when you give us a call at 503-232-8818. But really, the biggest thank you of all is that you can turn your radio in on any time of day and get quality programming. That should really be all the thank you you need. But if you need more thank you, ask the person who's answering the phone, who's also a volunteer, just what kind of ways we can say thank you. We've got tickets to things. We've got books. We've got CDs. You know, what your druthers are, we can probably set you up well. But you got to give us a call at 503-232-8818. Let me say it more slowly. 503-232-8818. So please give us a call. Help us out. Show KABU that you love it.
The U.S. space agency NASA announced that atmospheric scientists in recent weeks observed the largest hole in the ozone layer ever recorded over the southern hemisphere. Gaps in the ozone layer which blocks much of the sun's harmful ultraviolet rays, expand and contract over time, but are blamed primarily on human activity that releases chlorine and bromine gases that destroy ozone. From September 21st to 30th, the average area of the ozone layer was the largest ever observed, at over 10 million square miles, roughly three times the size of Australia and larger than the surface area of North America.
Recently, Napa engineering firm Chaudhary and Associates Incorporated hosted a fundraiser for the American Society for Health for All. This year, the organization raised $30,123 for ASHA, a non-profit organization that provides a range of health services, including much-needed vaccinations to children living in more than 40 slums in Delhi, India. Since ASHA was founded in 1988, 90% of children under 5 in the slums of Delhi are now immunized against whooping cough, polio, tetanus, and measles, virtually eliminating these diseases. The infant mortality rate has fallen from 100 per 1,000 live births to 29 per 1,000 live births. Malnutrition rates in children have fallen from 80% to 10%. Hooray, Liam.
An international human rights activist was unable to collect an award from the Institute of Policy Studies in Washington because the U.S. has him on a no-fly list and labels him as a terrorist threat, despite previously being cleared by an inquiry. Canadian Mayor Arar was imprisoned and tortured after being sent by the U.S. to a prison in Syria for 10 months. The U.S. authorities picked him up during a stopover while flying home to Canada after a vacation in 2002. He and his wife were wrongly accused of being extremists and of having ties with Al-Qaeda, although the authorities had no evidence of this. He was the subject of U.S. rendition and was taken by force to Syria via Jordan.
On November 7th of this year, voters in Nevada will get to choose if they want marijuana to become legalized. The maximum legally an adult could carry on them would be 1 ounce. However, the bill, if passed, would allow states to put up harsher punishments if one was caught selling the drug to minors. Also, if one were to drive on marijuana, the punishments would be more severe. The state would then also allow the setup of government-regulated stops where one could buy pot legally. And the state would put a $45 excise tax on an ounce. This would lead to some $28 million a year for the state, Liam.
It's 5:13. Time for daily commentary from Jim Hightower.
Why should politics be nothing but an interminable series of deadly serious, often boring meetings? I say we ought to put the party back in politics so people can have a good time while organizing, strategizing, and mobilizing to save the world. That's why I enthusiastically endorse a new political movement that's sweeping the country. It's called Drinking Liberally, a sort of saloon society for progressives. It offers a casual, fun, down-home way for ordinary folks to get together regularly and share political thoughts while sharing a pitcher of beer. This is as American as apple pie. Public houses were the, quote, seedbeds of the revolution. Indeed, the founders shaped much of our Constitution's language by discussing their ideas over pints of ale in the taverns of Philadelphia. After all, saloons are egalitarian spaces. You share common ground at the bar and feel free to talk to strangers. So, in 2003, a small group in New York City began to meet weekly at a local bar to hoist a few, get to know one another, and have free-flowing political discussions. Yes, they emphasize drinking responsibly, and they use designated drivers. But the idea is to be casual, enjoy each other, actually have conversations, learn, tell stories and jokes, vent, offer ideas, and just talk politics. Thanks to the Internet and an organized push by this original group, there are now 160 chapters of Drinking Liberally located in nearly every state. If you'd like to start your own, the group is happy to help you get it going. They'll have a 15-minute initial phone chat with you to bring you up to speed on steps to make your effort a success, and they'll offer ongoing support through their easy-to-use website. This is Jim Hightower saying, to help build democracy one drink at a time in your own local watering hole, send an email requesting help to info@drinkingliberally.org. Tell them Hightower sent you.
This Jim Hightower commentary has been brought to you by the United Steelworkers, the union committed to winning every employee's right to choose representation free from fear of being intimidated or fired. Visit us on the World Wide Web at usw.org.
Stay tuned for Counterspin following the newscast at 5:30. And at 6 o'clock, hear Bread and Roses. Boys will be men, guiding boys to manhood and their humanity is their topic. At 7, it's The Essence of Soul with Shahid Hamid. Tonight's weather, clear with a wee bit of fog, lows in the 40s. Over the weekend, sunny and bright, high 65 to 70. You are listening to the KBOO Evening News, Portland, Corvallis, Vancouver, and Hood River.
Prime Minister Tony Blair is to urge Europe's leaders to step up pressure for a ceasefire to halt the spiraling cycle of violence in Darfur. He will use an EU summit in Finland to plead for backing from his colleagues to use EU political muscle to exert pressure on Sudan's minister, or rather his president, Omar al-Bashir. Six agencies, Oxfam, the Catholic Agency for Overseas Development, CARE International, Christian Aid, International Rescue Committee, and CARE Fund, issued a statement warning that the crisis would continue to escalate unless international bodies such as the EU take on a greater leadership role. International Development Secretary Hilary Benn has suggested that the Janjaweed might be getting help from the Sudanese government in a war estimated to have cost anywhere from 50,000 to 450,000 lives.
Survivors of genocides in Europe, Africa, and Asia today urge European leaders meeting in Finland to act urgently to stop the conflict in Sudan's Darfur region after accusing them of being too passive. In an open letter published in European newspapers, 120 survivors of the Nazi Holocaust and genocides in Cambodia, Rwanda, and Bosnia urged EU heads of governments and heads of state to impose sanctions on the Sudanese government. The group urged EU leaders to agree to monitor and implement a United Nations authorized air exclusion zone over Darfur and apply EU-wide pressure on Sudan to stop its current offensive and stop killing civilians and accept a UN force. It also urged them to impose asset freezes and travel bans on those Sudanese officials responsible for human rights abuses and crimes against humanity, as well as help strengthen the African Union force in Darfur.
After more than 50 years, the U.S. military has closed its naval base in Keflavik, Iceland. KBOO News volunteer, or rather graduate, Andrew Stelzer reports for Free Speech Radio News.
The American base and its presence in Iceland was the most controversial issue of Icelandic politics for half a century.
Steingrimur Sigfusson is chair of the Left Green Party of Iceland. He's been a member of parliament since 1983.
And for decades, the population was more or less split in half. And it crossed party lines to a certain extent.
The Keflavik base had up to 45,000 U.S. service members stationed there during the Cold War, when its strategic importance was at its height. With no military of their own, Iceland has been under the informal military protection of the U.S. since the country gained its independence from Denmark in 1944, and a formal agreement was signed in 1951 when the base was opened about 30 miles from the capital city of Reykjavik. Closing the base has been a highly debated topic since it opened, according to peace activist Brigitte Jonsdottir.
It's just sort of this fear of independence, because we've never really been independent. I mean, as soon as we got our independence, the U.S. Army came here and we sort of looked at that as our sort of savior.
Under a new treaty signed by the U.S. and Iceland, the U.S. will still conduct military exercises on Icelandic territory, airspace, and water. A week after the base's closure, U.S. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice held a press conference with the Prime Minister of Iceland to sign a new agreement. Both officials promised that the U.S. will still protect Iceland, albeit from mobile locations. The dependent relationship may be one reason why Iceland is participating in the NATO peacekeeping force in Afghanistan.
We are on the coalition of the willing. There were two people that decided to do that, the foreign minister and the prime minister, just did that without asking anybody, and 99% of the nation did not want to be on this list.
Closing the U.S. base had been the focus of dozens of demonstrations, and its presence angered a population which prided themselves on being peaceful. According to author Andre Magnusson, the resistance to close the base was founded in a fear that jobs would be lost.
We could not take the decision of saying, yes, the base can close, because we had 1,500 jobs in the base. The Americans had to say, now we're closing the base. We're sick and tired of this struggling. Now we're laying off all the people we're leaving.
Although the removal of U.S. forces was announced in March, layoffs had been occurring gradually over the past few years. Magnusson says the fears were unfounded.
1 year after they said this, only 100 people of 1,500 are unemployed. We don't know what happened. People just silted into the market. It was valuable workforce for other companies. But we could not trust, we could not predict it. So therefore, we did not want the base to close because we thought the people would become alcoholics and begin to hit their children or something and go on welfare. But it didn't happen.
Even more upsetting to many, like Jónsdóttir in Iceland's activist community, was the timing of the closure of the base, grabbing headlines on the same day that a new dam went online in the pristine wilderness of eastern Iceland. Energy generated from the project will be used to power a billion-dollar aluminum smelter. The dam had been the target of a protest which brought out 5% of the country's population, but was pushed through by the ruling prime minister and his cabinet.
After we won our independence from having a military in Iceland, from the States, the same day we lost the independence to American multi-billion company called Alcoa.
For FSRN, reporting from Reykjavik, Iceland, I'm Andrew Stelzer.
Today's scheduled execution of Afzal Guru, convicted in the 2001 attack on Indian Parliament, has been postponed while India's president decides on the clemency petition filed by his wife. FSRN's Shahnawaz Khan has more.
The hanging was scheduled for October 20, but Afzal's wife has filed a clemency petition with Indian president, seeking to commute the death sentence. The president is still to decide on the petition, and by Indian laws, a person cannot be hanged while a petition is pending. Official sources confirmed today that the hanging will not take place on Friday because of the pending plea. Afzal's lawyers also said they will be approaching the Supreme Court with a curative petition, which will seek a review of the Apex Court's judgment of upholding the death penalty imposed on Afzal. Afzal's death sentence has stirred debate in India, with groups from Kashmir vociferously opposing the execution. Afzal's supporters also say that he has been denied a fair trial. While some Indian activists have supported clemency, the right-wing groups like the Bharatiya Janata Party are strongly against granting any favors to Afzal. For Free Speech Radio News, I am Shahnawaz Khan.
The Russian leadership has been playing down the reaction to President Putin's remarks concerning his counterpart in Israel, who is accused of raping several members of his staff. Putin was heard to say to Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Olmert at a Moscow press conference, "What a mighty man he turns out to be. He raped 10 women. I would never have expected this from him. He surprised us all. We all envy him." The remarks were overheard by Russian journalist Andrei Kolesnikov after the microphone Putin was using was turned off. A Kremlin spokesman admitted the allegations, but added that the context was lost in translation.
There is some good news from Iraq this month, as the U.S. military celebrated the opening of remodeled schools in Kirkuk, new healthcare facilities in Wasit province, the grand opening last week of a new surgical and pregnancy wing in northern Baghdad, and delivery of soccer balls and school supplies donated by American volunteers to Iraqi children. An elementary and middle school in Kirkuk were the first of six to be renovated as part of a program in which they will serve as models for other schools in the area. A new surgical and pregnancy wing also opened to serve about 140,000 people in the greater Tarmia area north of Baghdad. The $400,000 project features operating rooms, labor and delivery facilities, and recovery rooms.
At least 914,000 Iraqis have fled their homes since the U.S.-led invasion in 2003, more than a third since an increase in sectarian bloodshed at the start of this year, the U.N. Refugee Agency said Friday. The overall number is likely to be much higher, said Ron Redman, chief spokesman for the U.N. High Commissioner for Refugees. The agency has concluded that 750,000 displaced Iraqis remain in the country, while tens of thousands more have sought refuge abroad. Redman told Associated Press that at least 40,000 Iraqis have arrived in Syria every month for the last 4 months. According to Iraqi government information, 1.5 million people are currently classed as internally displaced, though that includes 800,000 from before the 2003 invasion.
The U.S. plans to double their construction workload in the next year to provide new roads, electrical power, and water distribution systems to the Afghan people, the U.S. Army's top engineer said yesterday. The Army Corps of Engineers will expand their development work in the coming fiscal year, beginning this month, to some 600 projects, an investment of more than $1 billion, said Lieutenant General Carl Strock. To address the shortage of electricity in the country, the Corps has completed about 70 micro-hydroelectric plants in six different provinces with an investment of about $3.4 million. Strock acknowledged many Afghans might not know about ongoing reconstruction projects because of the size of the country and poor communications. That's the KBOO Evening News for Friday, October 20, 2006, marking the 1,859th day since Bush made the declaration that he'd catch Osama bin Laden dead or alive. If you have any questions or comments about what you heard this evening, please call us at 503-231-8032 and leave a message on extension 203, send an email to pmnews@kboo.org. We also appreciate your news tips as well. Call us at 503-231-8032, extension 203. You are listening to KBOO at 90.7 FM in Portland, in Corvallis at 100.7 FM on translator K264AA, and in Hood River at 91.9 FM on translator K220HR. You can log on to our website at kboo.fm. Our producer for tonight's newscast is Josonia Watson. Our wire editors are Noah Eaton and Josonia Watson. Tonight's audio editor is Noah Eaton. Our engineer is Brian Averill. And the KBOO Evening News and Public Affairs Director is Lisa Loving. I'm Annalisa Hummel.
And I'm Liam Delta. Stay tuned after this newscast for Counterspin. And then on Monday morning at 7 o'clock, hear the KBOO Morning News. At 7:30, Cecil and Celeste host More Talk Radio. Their guest will be Morris Berman, author of numerous books, including The Reenchantment of the World. He'll discuss his latest book, Dark Ages America, The Final Phase of Empire. At 9 on the Old Mole Variety Hour, guests will include Antonia Juhas, author of The Bush Agenda, Invading the World, One Economy at a Time. At 10, Dr. David Naiman's guest on Health Watch is Marion Nessel, nutritionist, NYU professor, and author of Food Politics, How the Food Industry Influences Nutrition and Health. She'll discuss her most recent book, What to Eat. At 10:30 on Earthwatch, the guest is Stephen Best, co-editor of Igniting a Revolution, Voices in Defense of the Earth. And at 11, Democracy Now!
The current time is almost 29 minutes after 5 o'clock. You're listening to Community Radio KBOO in Portland, Vancouver, Corvallis, and Hood River. And once again, we ask you to become a member and let this be a stellar member-gathering newscast. We're going now to our Membership Central.
And this is Noah Eaton, assistant producer of tonight's broadcast, and I would like you to get on the phone right away and call 503-232-8818. And again, if you live outside the River City, 1-877-500-KBOO. And stay tuned for Counterspin, but first we want to go back to Membership Central for about 3.5 minutes to give you more ideas on why you should join.
Hey, thanks, guys. This is Carol Scholl. I'm one of the hosts of Bread and Roses Friday Evenings. And I just wanted to, if you are tuning in to hear Counterspin, we have a special offer just for you. If you dial 503-232-8818 for a $75 minimum pledge, we have Jeff Cohen's book, Cable News Confidential. Now, Jeff Cohen is the producer, pundit, and fair, that's fairness and accuracy in reporting, founder. They're the folks that bring Counterspin to you. And for tuning in, if it's that's your favorite show, you'll want to get this book. He offers a fast-paced romp through three major cable news channels. And it's a great book. $75 pledge, that's only 21 cents a day, $1.47 a month. So call now right before the show gets started, 503-232-8818.
All right, folks, this is Marlene, and the number, 503-232-8818, is what we need to hear you calling right now. Or if you prefer, get on the web, www.kboo.fm. Now, I know some of you are probably just getting kind of tired of this pledge break, and I can understand that because you'd rather not have us break in and ask you to become a member. But the fact is we are at least $15,000 behind from what we need to be able to raise during this pledge drive. And so that means there's a few of you who have yet to become members. You know, it's average that about, it's estimated that about only 10% of KBOO listeners actually are members. And maybe that's why we have to extend these pledge breaks for so long. So maybe we could get it up to 11 or 12%, and maybe that could happen today. Give us a call at 503-232-8818. Outside of Portland, it's 1-877-500-KBOO.
You know, we bring you Counterspin every single Friday evening between 5:30 and 6 o'clock, and it's just one of my favorite shows. I'm a former journalist junkie and news junkie. That didn't come out too, right? And I love listening to this critique, this critical review of the media. And then we have KBOO, and we're the ones bringing it to you. So you can support KBOO by calling in at 503-232-8818. Again, $75 minimum pledge. That's just $1.47 a week. We'll get you Jeff Cohen's new book. It's a KBOO premium called Cable News Confidential. This is the book you want if you are a Counterspin fan, and we have special copies available for you. But all, first thing you got to do is give us a call. We have a $240 goal tonight. Overall, $15,000 behind. So we don't want to extend the pledge drive, and we won't have to extend it if you just give us a call. Again, $240 goal. I do want to thank Jim in Hillsboro. He called in and gave a $40 pledge. He's actually a volunteer here, but he decided to go beyond volunteer work and support the station.
And Marilyn over in Molalla has renewed. Thank you, Marilyn. We need to hear from a few more of you who would like to renew at 503-232-8818.
When the prestigious British medical journal The Lancet published a peer-reviewed study of Iraq war fatalities that found that perhaps 600,000 excess deaths have occurred in Iraq as a consequence of the war, it created an immediate controversy. On one side, defenders explained that the study used the same tried-and-true statistical methods used to gauge excess deaths in other wars, disasters, and epidemics. On the other, some doubters wondered how one could extrapolate such large numbers from such small ones. But most avoided statistical arguments in favor of political ones, charging the study's authors and promoters with political bias. Daniel Davies is a contributor to the Comment is Free blog on the British newspaper The Guardian's website, where he published the commentary, The Numbers Do Add Up, on October 12th. Daniel Davies, welcome to Counterspin.
Hi, Steve.
Daniel, you say as a matter of statistics that the numbers are not hard to understand, but their presentation is sometimes not all it could be. For instance, you say that people should not concentrate so much on the number 655,000 that's been reported. Explain that for us.
If you've got a number like 650K there, then it looks on the face of it like it counts. You know, it's more or less impossible presentationally to get away from the fact that that number, sort of with kind of a comma in the middle, looks like the results of a census and it's not and could not be, you know, remotely comparable to a kind of census estimate. Also, it's an excess figure, so you're actually measuring it against a counterfactual baseline, the baseline of what would have happened if the treatment, in this case the invasion of Iraq, had never happened. You know, it's not disreputable, it's not a wrong way to kind of do treatment analysis, because that's the only way you can do it, but it does mean that that actual number is not something that I would want anyone to kind of bet anything important on. On the other hand, what that number is a way of describing kind of the results that you got, and the key result that you get here is that if you survey 12,000 individuals in 47 clusters of 40 households each, and you get the result that something like 300 people in that sample have died, that is not remotely consistent with there being zero excess deaths. It's not consistent with there being 50,000 excess deaths. It's probably not even consistent with there being a number less than 200,000 excess deaths. The number 650,000 is the hypothesis where it's kind of even money, whether it was higher or lower than that.
So we're still talking about, at minimum, hundreds of thousands of deaths.
No, absolutely. I simply don't see how anyone could possibly defend a number less than 100,000 or 200,000 on the basis of all the evidence that we've got. I mean, in particular, if you look at some of the numbers, well, the Iraq body count high estimate or the extrapolations from the Baghdad morgue data of 40, 50, 60,000 deaths, then that would imply a death rate in Iraq at present, which would be roughly equal to 1972 in Northern Ireland, which was the worst year of the Troubles, or indeed roughly equal to last year in Jamaica in terms of murders, or, you know, a particularly bad year in an American urban center in a crack war. Those are obviously bad places to live, and I personally would not choose to live in any one of them, but it's clear, just simply from the non-data information, that, you know, human life was kind of going on in Northern Ireland and in Jamaica or whatever in a way that it's not going on in a normal way in Iraq at present. You know, it's just not credible for someone to say that things there are no worse than they were last year in Jamaica.
Regarding the doubters, you point out that if one has faith in the political polls routinely reported in the news, then they shouldn't disparage the Lancet's findings. What do you mean by that?
It's the same sort of methodology. I mean, in particular, there is a surprisingly large community of people who have made the decision to sit down at a computer and write an article and publish it on the internet or in a newspaper, who clearly don't know what they're talking about. You can't put it any less bluntly than that. If someone is saying that it is intrinsically impossible to extrapolate 547 total deaths, 300 violent deaths, to a number of 650,000 total excess deaths, then it's not just kind of questioning a technical aspect of this study. That critique is implicitly going to the absolute heart of saying that they just simply don't believe in random sampling as a method of learning things about the world. It's the mere random sample critique, which has been around for as long as statistics, or specifically it's been around as long as ignorance about statistics.
There's been a significant backlash against the Lancet study. The Associated Press here in the United States contrasted the Lancet's findings with what they called a respected group whose estimate was closer to 50,000. Can you comment about the backlash?
There's a sort of slight attribution issue here in that everyone, including me, calls it the Lancet study, and the ship has sailed for calling it anything else. But it was, in fact, carried out by a team from Johns Hopkins University and a team from the medical school of one of the universities in Baghdad. The Associated Press comparison to, I believe, the respected group that they're talking about is IraqBodyCount.org. Iraq Body Count is a respected group, but they're not respected for making estimates. They don't do estimates. They specifically have a count, and their count is an enumeration of all of the media-reported deaths of civilians in Iraq. There's a lot of what you end up calling denialism on this subject, because there's a lot of people simply deciding in their own minds what would be an acceptable number, and then casting around for alternative estimates and nitpicking criticisms of departures from the Platonic form of the perfect survey in order to try and say that they've got some evidence for believing the number that they want to believe. It's probably the case that that's as far as I'd like to get into talking about the reactions to this survey, because as soon as you start talking about it in those terms, you're talking about numbers again, and I really don't like talking about numbers. I like talking about the particular question that we want to answer here, which was this not a disaster, only a little disaster, or a very big disaster? And the answer is, it's certainly a very big disaster, and is decent reason to believe that it could be heading for a disaster of world historic proportions.
Well, one would think that these findings would shock the conscience and should perhaps give pause to those reflexive supporters of the war who respond to criticism by saying, so you think it would be better if Saddam was still in power. Daniel Davies, tell us briefly, why is this study important?
It's important because do you think it would be better is a very subjective and value-laden question, not the sort of thing that anyone could answer. Do you think that more people would be consuming oxygen today if this particular war that was fought in the circumstances it was fought in had not been? And the answer to that appears to be yes, in the hundreds of thousands. It can't possibly be irrelevant to judging the success or failure of something, whether or not hundreds of thousands of people have died as a result of it. That's something that wouldn't necessarily be the only thing that would enter into the moral calculus, but it's got to be a big part of it. And certainly, and one thing I think does need to be made clear, this is a legitimate field of inquiry for doctors and statisticians working in the field of public health. When you've got this much kind of a movement in the death rate of a very populous country, that's a big problem, and it is exactly the sort of thing that people should be studying.
We've been speaking with Daniel Davies, who writes for the Comment is Free blog for London's Guardian and the Crooked Timber blog site. Daniel Davies, thanks again for joining us today on Counterspin.
Thanks very much, Steve.
And welcome back to the Membership Central. I'd like you to get on the phone right away and call 503-232-8818. Or if you live outside Stumptown, 1-877-500-KBOO. And the latter half of Counterspin will be here momentarily. But first, we'd like to take about 5 minutes to tell you more about why you should become a member. And here to explain that to you is my good friends at Membership Central.
I think that last piece by Counterspin is certainly self-explanatory, why a person should become a member. Where else can you hear that information in depth about what is happening in Iraq and the moral calculus that Daniel Davies talks about? What is your moral calculus? I'll give you a number to call, 503-232-8818. $75 pledge gives you Jeff Cohen's book, Jeff Cohen being the founder of FAIR, who brings you Counterspin.
All right, folks, this is Marlene, and the number is 503-232-8818. And do you hear that? Do you hear that in the background? That's one of our new pitchers. That's Fred, Fred the dog, howling to ask you to please become a member. What do you say, Fred?
You know,
absolutely.
Fred is spending his Friday evening here waiting for that phone to ring. Let's see what else he has to say. There he is. And he's saying he's howling for KBOO, and he wants you to call 503-232-8818. Make our $240 pledge. He's saying, call now. Please call now. I want to go home.
You see,
I want to go home.
You see, we are supposed to get you all excited about calling, and so we thought we would ask Fred to help us do that. Now, if you don't get excited when you hear a dog howling because it loves KBOO, I don't know what'll do it for you. So, wrap
well,
up
actually,
that excitement.
There is a Cable News Confidential, Jeff Cohen's book. We have Al Gore tickets for a pledge. Thank you, gift, $150, 503-232-8818.
Or www.kboo.fm.
Outside the calling area, give us a call at 1-877-500-5266. And you just heard it from Fred. He's just howling for KBOO tonight here at the station. Come on in to pick up those tickets, too. We're at 20 Southeast 8th in Northeast.
And we want to take a moment during this pledge drive and thank all of the restaurants who have been so generous today, sustaining us as we ask you to sustain the station. The Doug Fir Restaurant at 830 East Burnside, the Utopia Cafe at 3508 Southeast Belmont, and the Gotfa Restaurant at 3634 Northeast Sandy have all donated food to help with this pledge drive to keep the people answering the phones and the people doing the pitching.
But here's the deal, Marlene. We have just $240 to go to meet the goal tonight. We've had Marilyn call in and Jim call in. Marilyn all the way from Malala. Jim from Hillsboro. We want to hear some Portlanders call in, especially new members. This is a great program, comes on every Friday evening, 5:30 to 6, but we have to pay for it. And one way that you can help us pay for it is donating some money to KBOO tonight. In return, you get all sorts of fancy thank you gifts. First step, give us a call, 503-232-8818 or 1-877-500-5266. We have a few more minutes, so you could call now and not miss a single moment of Counterspin tonight.
And you know, Fred would be so happy that you called. How much is $240? That is only four phone calls of four people making a $60 minimum pledge. What is a $60 minimum pledge? $5 a month. So we are looking for four people to call in to give us a $5 a month pledge.
Listen to Fred. Fred really wants to go out for a walk, but, you know, his owner's here trying to answer, waiting to answer the phones. If we get those pledges, that goal in, Fred can go take his walk.
There you go. So you see, you can spring Fred loose right now just by giving us a call, 503-232-8818. There you go. You see, Fred is serious. He wants you to call, and he's only asking you for $5 a month, $1.25 a week. I think most of you could be able to do that. And if you can't, call in for a $40 pledge or call in and just tell us you love us. But please, become a
Again, I'd like to remind people that $100 a year is just 27 cents a day or $1.89 a week. So think about what you spend your money on and think about the great program you hear all throughout the day. Tonight coming up, we will be doing Bread and Roses and our usual Friday evening programming. So call us, 503-232-8818.
And now we're pleased to go present to you the latter half of this week's edition of Counterspin.
When the FCC declared war on indecency, there were many who pointed out that the guidelines were too vague and were bound to have a chilling impact on creative artists. But where in the mainstream conversation of this effort justified implicitly or explicitly as a defense of the country's children, did you hear the idea that all of this bleeping out of curse words and levying of fines might not be helping, might indeed be harming the kids it's supposed to be in aid of? Our next guest says just that, and she's not someone easily dismissed as unconcerned with children's interests when it comes to media. She's Peggy Charon, founder in 1968 of Action for Children's Television and a longtime advocate of quality programming for all of us. Welcome to Counterspin, Peggy Charon.
Nice to be here.
Well, the group, the Center for Creative Voices in Media, published a report last month on the impact of the FCC indecency efforts in which you are cited. It gives examples like the one of The Blues, Godfathers and Sons. That was the PBS documentary by Martin Scorsese where swear words of old blues men were deemed by the FCC to be indecent. And of course, all of this raises concerns about artist self-censorship. But I was struck by your comment that what effect all of this is going to have on the Martin Scorsese's isn't really the only question that we ought to be asking here, is it?
No, it isn't. I think that censorship has as bad an effect on children as it has on adults. And the nifty thing for parents about stuff they don't want their kids to hear is that they can always use the off button. Now, I know that some parents aren't home, that there are latchkey kids, and the world isn't perfect. But I think that then the obligation for parents is to educate their kids about why they are upset about what they're upset about and why they like what they like. And if you can really do a job talking to your children about how you feel about television, you sort of get between the child and the set, and that's a good thing.
Well, and so you're saying that when we remove content or remove programming, we're actually kind of losing an opportunity then to talk to kids.
Oh, a big opportunity. I think television is one of the best educators we got these days. And parents very often use programming to help their children understand even controversial topics like violence and poverty and racial disparity and cultural diversity. There is a lot of that on television these days, and it's a terrific place to talk to your kids.
Well, one of the points that was made in this report by the Center for Creative Voices and Media was very, very striking. It noted that in 2004, the then head of the FCC's Enforcement Bureau told a group of broadcasters who were looking essentially for guidance on the indecency rules, he couldn't say whether the 1979 miniseries Roots would be deemed indecent today.
I saw that, and anybody who can't understand that Roots was incredible education, especially for those days, really shouldn't be wrapped up with the Federal Communications Commission. Maybe he should be in the shoe business. The point about not understanding when a program can educate, even when it's disturbing, is kind of creepy. I mean, I think the whole FCC excitement about dirty words is amazing. For any of us, never mind children, you know, the toddlers go through a period of bathroom talk, they call it. Is that what the FCC is going to move in on next? You have the expletives used by soldiers in harrowing stories of war. And when kids get to be certainly young teenagers, that is educational programming, too. And what are you going to have? The soldiers say, goodness gracious, when they go over the edge into a world that's horrifying. I don't know where they're coming from, these characters, and it's very disturbing to me. You have tough talk that helps define characters in award-winning dramas. If you take away the way they talk, they don't seem like real people.
Certainly, when media are saying they're more and more concerned about being irrelevant, broadcast media certainly moving further and further away from real life in that regard doesn't seem a way to repair that.
And it isn't only words. They are concerned about TV moments that show images of parts of the body that it associates with sex. You know, everybody seems to be more upset about sex than they are about violence. Sex is sort of nice when you get old enough. Violence is really never very nice. And none of this is designed to limit the amount of violence on television. I'm not saying we should do that, but it's amazing where the FCC is focusing its attention. I think many more parents are concerned about messages to go rub out somebody in the street than they are about somebody who uses a dirty word.
Well, you make the point that parents can, to a large degree, monitor what their children see. And we were thinking maybe it was you who we first heard phrase it this way. You can change the dial, but you can't turn on what isn't
right
there.
Right.
And
absolutely
you,
right.
And you have suggested that maybe all of this is kind of a red herring to distract from a void, a lack of good programming for kids.
I think that what's really missing is programming these days for the older child, for young teenagers, that's designed to educate or to give them some kind of experience that they aren't getting from other kinds of media.
Well, I want to thank you very much for joining us today. We've been speaking with Peggy Charon, founder of Action for Children's Television. The report we've been discussing is called Big Chill, How the FCC's Indecency Decisions Stifle Free Expression, Threaten Quality Television, and Harm America's Children. It's by the Center for Creative Voices and Media and can be found on their website, www.creativevoices.us. Thank you very much for joining us today on Counterspin, Peggy Charon.
Thank you.
And that's it for Counterspin for this week. Counterspin is produced by the staff and interns at FAIR, the National Media Watch Group. If you missed part of today's show or you'd like to hear previous shows, you can find them on FAIR's website, www.fair.org. That's also the place to sign up for FAIR's Action Alert Network. The show is engineered by Kelly Spivey at Mercer Media. With me is Steve Rendell. I'm Janine Jackson. Thanks for listening to Counterspin.
And now we'd like to take you back to Membership Central. Call 503-232-8818. And again, if you live outside the City of Roses, 1-877-500-KBOO. And back we go.
Fantastic Counterspin program. Starting out with reports from Iraq on the death tolls, and what does all that mean? What is the moral calculus? And ending with children, programming for kids and young teens on TV. You can get Counterspin's, a new book from Counterspin's Jeff Cohen, Cable News Confidential, by calling in. And that's a special offer tonight. It's $75. So call in 503-232-8818. Here in the studio, we have Fred, who I think has something to say, and maybe not. Fred is the station dog this evening, hanging out. He's a little bored, and he wants you to call in. And we're offering tonight a deal for you. You can get a membership for your dog.
Absolutely. Fred is suggesting if you have a dog, that you take out a membership for that dog. Call us at 503-232-8818. It is the Fred special, the Fred news special, this particular membership. And if you live outside the Rose City, it's 1-877-500-KBOO. But call in and ask these folks ready to answer the phone for the Fred news special, and they will hook you up away.
What we have tonight, too, and we're running out of these tickets, is tickets to see Al Gore. And the date of that is coming
October
up next
24th,
week.
October 24th, Tuesday night.
At 8 o'clock. We have two pairs of tickets left, so you want to call right now to get those. That's for a minimum pledge of $150. That's a for the year. And that's a little over $2 and about 40 cents per week to get those tickets. Again, Al Gore tickets and a book by Counterspin available for you right now if you do call in, 503-232-8818.
Folks, we are $1,500 behind the goal. Excuse me, $15,000 behind our goal. And the fact is that only about 10% of folks who listen ever become members. If we could get that up to 11, 12, maybe even 15%, in my most perfect fantasy, 15% of members, 15% of listeners would become members, we would be set up. And we wouldn't have to extend this pledge drive at all. And we'd like you to do that because KBOO is worth it. So give us a call right now at 503-232-8818.
You know, the sad news, Marlene, is not only are we $15,000 behind goal, tonight for this program, we've only received $60. So we'd like to hear those phone rings. Phone ring. We have Fred the dog here is waiting to go home, but he's not going to go home until we reach a goal.
And
that goal, again, is we just need $180 more to call in. We got Al Gore tickets. We have Jeff Cohen's. And we want to thank somebody for calling.
Absolutely. We want to, I'm not sure what the name is.
Can you?
What's that? Marta. We want to thank Marta for her generous membership donation that she just called in and gave us. And we'd like the rest of you to follow suit of Marta, because we only need three more folks calling in with a $60 minimum pledge, and we will have our goal met for this program. And we also want to thank Conch from Northeast Portland, who just called with a renewal. Thank you, Conch. We are getting it together here. But let's show the folks who decide the programming here at KBOO, which of course is you, let's show us that
we like Counterspin.
Counterspin
is a program that we certainly have to pay for here. And how do we pay for it? Well, that's where y'all come in. And how everything runs here. We only have 10 paid staff members. The rest is volunteers. They spend countless hours putting on great programming. But it doesn't happen without your help. And if you are a member, get a membership for your friend or your friend's dog. That's a great way to expand the world of KBOO.
And you know, folks, yesterday, corporate media, yes, I was listening to it, corporate media was very, very busy talking all about the new changes that NBC has in their television lineup as a way to gain more market share. Now, I didn't hear anything about that story on KBOO at all about NBC, because KBOO does not consider what TV stations do to be news unless they're trying to steal ability to be on the airwaves. Sometimes we do talk about that, but we don't talk about TV programming as though it's news. So because of that, we need you to call 503-232-8818.
So let's do some math. A monthly deduction of $15 just from your checking account is a $180 pledge. A monthly deduction of $20 is a $240 minimum pledge. So if you can do $20 a month, this is the place to call, 503-232-8818. And that's 1-877-500-5266.
This is KBOO Portland, listener-powered, non-corporate community radio.
Welcome to Bread and Roses. I'm your host, Leanne Kranz. That was Liz Fair with Whip Smart. Tonight, we'll begin a conversation about guiding our sons to manhood and their humanity. We've all heard the phrase, boys will be boys. It's used to explain or excuse many questionable behaviors without question. We must remember that boys will be men someday. From an early age, boys are raised and hazed to act like a man. As parents, as a community, a society, we must ask ourselves if our definition of manhood allows boys to be fully human, and what impact that has on our daughters and the world at large. With me on the phone tonight from Oakland, California, is Alan Creighton, a social justice and violence prevention health educator at the University of California at Berkeley, and co-founder of the internationally recognized Oakland Men's Project, a community education and prevention organization devoted to ending male violence. Welcome, Alan.
Good evening, Leanne. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining us. So, Alan, let's start at the very beginning. A baby boy is born to this world, and what do we do to them?
Well, I'll ask all of us to think for a moment and to imagine a newborn baby. It's just an exercise we do in classrooms sometimes. If you were actually holding a newborn child and holding it up and looking it in the face, and one or two words swam into your mind, what might they be? Over and over again, people say pure, innocent, cute, a miracle, damp, loud, really easily expresses emotions, to put it mildly, and a lot of other things like that. We pretty much universally recognize that these are things that we come here with that are human.
Mm-hmm.
And what it is to be human, that is what is true about each of us. And I think possibly the only other thing that's completely true is that something that fresh and open to the world can bruise very easily.
Mm-hmm.
When you ask what are the top 10 things that adults say to babies and children that aren't so great for babies, to hear the same words come up over and over, not now, no, you can't, you're stupid, because I said so. I brought you into this world. I can take you out. And other things that we say when we're a little bit overworked ourselves and not quite sure what to do. As that baby grows up and starts going to school and coming into the world, all kinds of other things start happening. Things happen to you based on the color of your skin,
mm-hmm.
on whether your folks have a lot of money,
mm-hmm.
and whether you're from another country, and whether your first language is English, and all kinds of other differences among us.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens to boys? What gets said to boys that isn't so great for boys to hear? What are the names that boys get called as commonplace as every day on the schoolyard? How do older men treat boys? How are boys touched or not touched? How do we lay hands on them? How might we avoid laying hands on them? When they look around and see what they're expected to be doing, what do they see? What are the toys that are available to them? What are the pictures they see on television? How do they get treated at school? What happens when the children get separated into gender separate games in recess? What are they learning?
And we are going to dig into that information as soon as we take a quick break with our membership central.
This is Carol Scholl. I'm one of the hosts of Bread and Roses. I just want to thank Leanne for this fantastic interview tonight. Tonight we are offering as a special Bread and Roses thank you gift, Boys Will Be Men, Raising Our Sons for Courage, Caring, and Community by Paul Kivel. You want to call 503-232-8818, and that's a great deal because that's a $60 minimum pledge. Again, Paul Kivel's book, Boys Will Be Men, Raising Our Sons for Courage, Caring, and Community. Now, this is some more fantastic programming brought to you by Bread and Roses. We come to you every Friday night from 6 to 7 o'clock. And tonight, just about everyone's here volunteering their Friday evening to answer phones because we want to make our program goal. That goal is $360, and we can do it. I want to thank Christina of Portland for calling in. She gave us a great start to the evening, but we still have $360 to go. That's our program goal for the evening. Friday evening with KBU is always a great time. If you're out on the roads and you're a little far from the Portland area, give us a call at 1-877-500-KBOO. Again, this is Bread and Roses. And call in to support the station. It's just a great just an example of the great program we have here at KABU. Counterspin, you just listened to. We still have Jeff Cohen's book, Cable News Confidential. And again, that's for a very small minimum pledge. So to find out about that, though, to find out about all the other different thank you gifts we have, as first thing you have to do is give us a call. We're $15,000 behind goal, but we know we can do it, and we can do it with you making that call tonight.
Folks, this is Bread and Roses. Now, where else on your radio dial can you hear feminist news and public affairs? That's right. There isn't anywhere else. That's why we need you to give us a call. We need you, by your membership tonight, to tell KABU that you want Bread and Roses to stay strong and to stay available. 503-232-8818.
And, you know, I want to make a special appeal to parents, or if you know somebody who's going to be a parent, to get this book, support KABU and get this book, Boys Will Be Men, Raising Our Sons for Courage, Caring, and Community. And you can do both things all in one phone call, 1-877-500-5266. And by calling in, we will give you a copy of this book for a small minimum pledge. Again, that's a special offer for this show only, and you only have till 7 o'clock to call in. So definitely make that call now.
And my guest tonight, Alan Creighton, was very involved in this book, Boys Will Be Men, that we're offering tonight. Alan, would you like to give the audience a sense of what this book contains? And what went into the making of this book?
Well, as Paul's very clear in the book, Paul and I are co-founders of the Open Men's Project, and I got to be in his house and help care for his children over the last 25 years of everybody's growing up. It's really a how-to manual in detail about what happens to boys now, what goes on with the expectations for boys, what are the real lives and expectations that are coming to them, which are pretty grim under the guise of act like a man, as well as the privileges that come to them basically over women as a payoff for leading the grim lives that we're facing.
Mm-hmm.
And this is really a very practical how-to handbook for how to be with children, young boys and older boys, in the process of the raising them in your family, dealing with school, dealing with the public institutions that they're going to come in contact with, and the real details of doing that, like what to do about toy guns, what to do about talking about sex, what to do about discipline, what to do about punishment, what to do about helping boys learn decision-making, what to do about helping boys begin to take some responsibility for caring for themselves, looking at them, noticing how they feel, noticing their spread of feelings. Lots of details like that that come out of the real practical life of Paul and his family and lots of other men and families that he consulted with.
Thank you. This is definitely a how-to guide that every parent should be thinking about having. You got a friend that is going to be raising boys or might in the future. Definitely give us a call. This is, again, some of the community programming that we do here at Bread and Roses. The number to call, 503-232-8818. If you're concerned about how children are raised, you're concerned about your friends raising their children, and certainly the bad rap that boys get, then you want this book for a minimum pledge of just $60. You can support KABU and get the book. It's an offer tonight only. I can't emphasize that enough. At 7 o'clock, no more books. So 503-232-8818.
You know, folks, this is the kind of feminist public affairs programming that you've come to rely on Bread and Roses to bring you every Friday evening. So if you want to make sure that Bread and Roses knows you are hearing it, please give us a call now. Create a new membership, renew your membership, increase your membership. But first of all, just give us a call, 503-232-8818. I'd hate to see the a collective of Bread and Roses go through their whole program and hardly hear from any of you, because that can get very disheartening. You begin to wonder, is anybody listening? 503-232-8818.
And, you know, this book is and this program is it shows you the depth of caring that, that certainly we as volunteers for KBOO have for our community. It's not just about empowering women. It's about empowering men. It's about raising great children. It's about boys growing up to be wonderful, wonderful human beings and fighting all those messages that they get. This is the, again, this is a how-to manual. Boys Will Be Men, Raising Our Sons for Courage, Caring Community. Special offer tonight, 503-232-8818.
Okay, welcome back to Bread and Roses. We're talking with Alan Creighton, social justice and violence prevention health educator at UC Berkeley, co-founder of the Oakland Men's Project. And we're discussing tonight how we are raising our sons. Alan, if you're finished with the things you began earlier, it might be a good time to dig into our current definition of manhood.
You bet. One of the things to say about that, it's a figure we used for many years, the act like a man box, that there is a training process for boys that is to some degree unspoken, at least partly physical and partly emotional, that puts us in the position of feeling like we have to act like a man in very stereotypical meanings of that term.
Mm-hmm.
Don't cry. Fight, be in charge, be in control. It's something like a box without much air in it. And the enforcements of the box on one side are the names that boys get called to make sure we stay in the box. The physical and emotional things that happen to boys, the way boys stop being touched affectionately after the age of 4 or 5, for some boys anyway.
Mm-hmm.
The way boys get reprimanded or disciplined, corporal punishment, sort of the training process for boys going into sports, the ways boys learn to treat each other, where competition and someone being in charge looks like the only way you're going to get any self-respect.
Mm-hmm.
And underneath it all, the bottom wall is what you get if you actually stay in the box, which is there are plenty of things to lose, but what it looks like you get is some privilege over exactly one group of people, namely women, according to the images of women that boys see around them all the time.
Mm-hmm.
The reality for boys and for young men is that the lives they're headed for, the careers they're headed for, aside from the promise that is made about boys being in charge and being on, in control and being on top, the real reality in the economic system in the United States, and this is explained pretty well in Paul's book, very well in Paul's book, is that really maybe 20% of the country, and a very small percentage of that actually, but 20% of the country is actually in a position to be able to make decisions about what happens in the lives of this democracy because of the wealth they have.
Mm-hmm.
So very few boys are actually going to make it. And if you come from poor people, if your skin color is darker than white, you're pretty clear by an early age, from the experience you have at school and from the way that teachers may treat you without even realizing they're treating you this way, the way the police relate to you, that you're not going to get very far. I think by the time boys are teenagers, for many of them, there is this expectation that they only have from the neighborhoods they live in and the schools they go to and the expectations they have about what they're going to achieve, but the realities that they see among the adult men around them, there's this kind of a horrible conditioning process out of which probably the only place they can look to feel like they're going to have some superiority is when the women around them.
Mm.
And this comes in the forms of all the images that boys get from how women are treated in their family, how they see women treated on television, the pornography industry that is pretty deeply into young men by the time they're 13, 14, 15, 16, 17. The images all around them that they see, as opposed to the realities that they could be seeing, show that women are the people who are supposed to take care of them and supposed to take care of their feelings. I'm not supposed to know how I feel about this woman I can manage to get to be in a relationship with. It's going to take care of my feelings. And if she doesn't, I can feel like I'm going to die, and I have every right to do anything I can to make sure she takes care of me.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is a really serious physical an emotional and mental conditioning process that you have to mobilize an entire society for. How you get from a baby that pure, innocent, sweet, loud, has plenty of feelings to express, a whole spectrum of feelings to express, to the Marine who's under trial in Iraq for planning for kidnapping, raping, and then killing and burning a 14-year-old girl. How you get to the boys who finally decide to take guns out of their father's closets and go to school. How you get to the men much higher up the pyramid who are making decisions that set up the boys to be headed in these directions. How you get to the maybe 40 or 50% of young African-American and Latino boys who drop out of high school because they're pretty clear it's not for them. How you get to creating the army of one that we see plastered all over the media about how our voice is supposed to be, is to mobilize institutions all over the society to make this happen. Some of the other things that back up the box are competitive sports, sort of ongoing training and homophobia, the way boys learn to be afraid of each other.
You know, that seems so central to this conversation, homophobia. It's the fastest way to get a boy who might be considering stepping outside of the box. It's the fastest way to get them to jump right back in.
Or that in any schoolyard in the country, this is mm-hmm. a way that you could get a fight to the death started if yeah. you say the word fag just right.
Violence is the mechanism that boys are forced to use to prove who they are.
Well, if I don't learn how to talk about my feelings or even know I have them, mm-hmm. it looks like anger is the only one. And everywhere around me, I see that men who have anger, I can see this in any Hollywood action movie. There's a moment when the man really gets mad and stuff starts happening. Ah, that's what I want to be. I want to be like that guy.
Yeah, it's perceived as they're finally taking control of a situation.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, look at what control they've got. Well, look at what control I get.
Mm-hmm.
The actual cost to me, in terms of friendships and contacts and lifelong relationships,
mm-hmm.
not to mention my physical health, is utterly devastating.
It really divides boys. You know, you talked about that 20% of society that runs everything. All the rest of us are divided. And this is just yet another way boys are divided from each other and girls.
This is a really early message of feminism that I think the men's movement has been utterly clear about all the way along and has not yet really been acknowledged, especially by men who do this kind of work, try to think about boys, because I think a lot of us really got started because movements in feminism said, you got to look at what's happening here. All this violence against women and this unequal treatment and stuff, this is a men's problem, not a women's problem. You have to do something about this.
Mm-hmm.
And I think part of the process of the Oakland Men's Project was for us to begin to see the balance of privilege, the payoff, and the balance of damage that was happening to us and to the boys we were going out to talk to.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a solution to this to put more resources into boys that you take away from girls.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't do any good for boys. When boys see unequal resources going into them, they see the same kind of, well, women aren't that important, girls aren't that important,
mm-hmm.
that is putting us in this problem in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a long story with a short conclusion, that an old exercise we have in the movement is the male emotional funnel. You have all these feelings, and you're allowed to show one of them, anger. I think when we used to run, I used to be part of a collective that ran batterers groups, groups for battering men in San Francisco. We'd do that exercise, and it was pretty clear to the men who were in the group trying to figure out how to stop being violent to their partners and children that they had a lot of background conditioning going right up into the present and reinforced every day, that when I'm angry, I get entitled to do anything I want. When I'm angry, I'm not only frightening to everybody else, but I'm frightening to myself. When I'm angry, the only thing I can do is hit. And I think boys get that very early on from parents who don't really want them to get it, but nonetheless, it gets passed on.
Mm.
So if we're talking about institutional shaping of boys that happens so profoundly in all the institutions that they're exposed to, we're really talking about not only just figuring out how to parent boys differently or better than we've been doing so far,
mm-hmm.
but also think about how to enable people is to begin to take on those institutions.
Right.
And to challenge them.
Right. To feel that it's their game. You know, they have a stake in it as well.
Yeah. Unquestionably.
Mm-hmm.
I have a stake in it. If somebody calls me a fag in the schoolyard and I feel like my identity is being threatened and I have to hurt somebody or I'm going to get hurt really badly.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm getting disrespected, and the only thing I have in my life that I feel like I can hold on to is this little self-respect.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if the only thing I have to hold on to is this little self-respect, what's going on in my life that has put me in that position?
Mm-hmm.
Why is this the only thing I can do? Who told me this?
Mm-hmm.
Why is this my choice? It doesn't look like a choice. It makes me want to, or I'm invited, if I'm being taught critical thinking skills and mm-hmm. how to negotiate with other people, to begin to think about why this situation is happening. How have I been put here? What are the messages that I'm getting? And one of the 20 things I could do differently.
You know, one of the things that is very interesting about this book we're talking about tonight, Boys Will Be Men, it makes the connection between the Act Like a Man box and our actions with other nations across the globe. It's kind of the foundation of our foreign policy as well. World leaders prove their manhood throughout the world by going to war. You know, it's that same assumption that we must be aggressive in policy. We cannot show weakness. You know, never back down. Stay the course. You know, and it's ironic that the institutions you're talking about and the way we're raising our sons, it's boys are not conditioned to be democratic at all. They get very little practice in democracy. Some have never seen it.
I think that's one of the really profound things in Paul's book.
Mm-hmm.
He begins it by really talking about boys as actors in the world.
Mm-hmm.
It's really, it's almost like taking it off the question of gender. For years, this has been a battle. We know we wrote the curriculum for boys for Take Our Daughters to Work Day for the Ms. Foundation, and there was all this backlash against feminism about, well, what about the boys? Why can't boys have anything without noticing that boys have a lot already? And one of the things you really have to think about, it's almost taking the discussion out of gender already. Completely. Like, how do boys not just get over-involved and try to figure out how to be better boys, but how do they actually learn to act in the world? And what are values that we could transmit and begin to train boys in to really think about how to live in community differently?
Mm-hmm.
There are democratic values that you can start with when your child is 2 years old, about how to listen, how to notice what feelings I have, how to talk about my feelings, how to begin to ask others how they're feeling,
mm-hmm.
how to negotiate.
Mm-hmm.
How to think through situations by discussing them rather than pushing one's way through. These are really ground rules for building community in the world. And it's really a profound way to begin the discussion about raising boys.
Yes, this is social and emotional education that is missing from most of our curriculum.
Yeah, apparently against the wishes of most of us, because all of us would like boys to be raised not to do the kinds of things boys end up doing.
Alan, we're going to take another quick break with Plett and go over to Membership Central.
This is Carol, one of your Bread and Roses hosts. What a great show Leanne is putting on. She's speaking to Alan Creighton. He's the editor of a how-to book, and parents, you can get this book tonight on Bread and Roses for a $60 minimum pledge. So this is an offer only for this evening. If you are a parent, if you are know somebody who's a new parent, how to raise kids, how to create a better community, how to create a more peaceful world, 503-232-8818 is the first step. 503-232-8818. Again, we're offering this book, Boys Will Be Men, Raising Our Sons for Courage, Caring, and Community. 1-877-500-KBOO. We want to thank April, Jasmine, Christina, Adam, and Yeah, I think that's it. We have gone over goal, but you know, we're $15,000 behind goal for the station. So I want to thank all those fantastic people that have called in. We're talking about creating a better world. You know, too often as people on the left, we talk about what's wrong with the world, or we concentrate on making, like stopping the war. But what about what happens right here in our homes? This is a book that you can get tonight by calling in that could change things, that could make our children into better people and help parents. I mean, parents have a heck of a job, This is one of those how-to guides. 503-232-8818. This is Bread and Roses. Call in, support the show, 1-877-500-5266. Give us a call.
And once again, we just want to thank April from Silverton, Jasmine from North Portland, Christina from Southwest Portland, and Alan from Southeast Portland. Jasmine and Christina have just become new members. Alan and April have just renewed. And that is the kind of vote of confidence we need to continue this quality of programming that we've come to expect from KBOO. Boys Will Be Men, Raising Our Sons for Courage, Caring, and Community is the book that we are offering tonight for a $60 minimum pledge. That averages out to $5 a month, $1.25 a week. If you are interested in receiving this book, give us a call at 503-232-8818. You know, I teach women's studies at Portland State, and I always tell my students that patriarchy hurts women, but there's no question in my mind that it also hurts men. It sounds like this is a book that starts to challenge some of those values of patriarchy and starts to give us some actual tools for addressing how patriarchy hurts men from the time that they are little boys. If you're interested in that, give us a call at 503-232-8818. Outside the Rose City, it's 1-877-500-KBOO. On the web, www.kboo.fm. Boys Will Be Men. Alan Creighton is our special guest tonight. And this book, he edited it, but it's written by Paul Kivel, who many of you may remember is a longtime anti-racism activist and has also written on that topic as well. So definitely some good food for thought here, but not only food for thought, some action steps to take just by calling 503-232-8818.
If you're already a member, here's a great way to give a gift to a friend, especially a friend who's going to be a parent. Call in, get a gift membership. Tell the people that answer the phone that you're getting a gift membership for so-and-so, and they'll fill out that slip for you. And you can also get them this book, Boys Will Be Men, Raising Our Sons for Courage, Caring, and Community. What you could also do, though, is get a gift membership and get some tickets to Al Gore. We have just a few tickets left to Al Gore. That's a $150 minimum pledge. Only here at KBOO you get those free tickets. Al Gore's coming to town on October 24th, 8 p.m., Theater of the Clouds at the Rose Quarter. So if you're interested in what he has to say, then the number to call, 503-232-8818, 1-877-500-5266.
And one thing I would like to convey to the listeners is that this book is the real deal. Alan Creighton has been working with Paul Kivel for almost 30 years now in these uncharted waters of examining these sorts of issues. And not only do they address many of the things that we've talked about, but it encourages us to raise sons who not only treat women with respect and who get their privilege and get their how society impacts the lives of each of us, but this encourages us to raise boys with a social commitment to actually take a role in making society better. So these people that wrote this book, they make connections that blow my mind. It's a solid piece of work.
And you know, Leanne, what's really nice is it's positive connection. It's a positive piece. It's so easy to go around criticizing men or boys or other parents, but this is a way to do something positive. And that's what we like to do here on Bread and Roses, give you a positive ways to change the world for the better. Start your weekend out right and call us. Get a thank you gift, 1-800-1-877-500-5266. If you're at home and you happen to be near the computer, pledge online, www.kboo.fm.
Okay, folks, 503-232-8818. I'm sure you're tired of hearing that number, but we're going to keep saying it because we know that you want to become a member. We know you want to voice your support for this kind of quality programming that we have tonight. So give us a call.
Okay, welcome back to Bread and Roses. Again, we're on the line with Alan Creighton, social justice and violence prevention health educator from UC Berkeley and the co-founder of the Oakland Men's Project. We're talking about how to raise sons in this society. And Alan, we've talked a lot about the environment that boys are born into and the way we are socializing them currently.
Yes.
How can we be allies to boys and help them to create an identity and a life outside of this act like a man box and not at the expense of our daughters or other men?
Well, you bet. It's a great question. The question that happens all the time. How can we get them to? Well, actually, the first two things probably to notice are to remember that boys are those ex-babies, to see whatever the behavior that's going on, that in there is somebody who actually has many different kinds of feelings, has all kinds of capacities to love, and is hungering to be out here. Sometimes with our negative experiences of men, we may have a hard time. I may have a hard time remembering that when a boy is being, well, how I feel, unruly or like that. Mm-hmm. But really looking at what's going on with boys and seeing them in the middle of all the other stuff that is sitting on is a really important thing. And beginning there to work with boys from the time they're very, very young on contradicting the messages that come in the box, I mean in very practical ways.
Mm-hmm.
Teaching a boy through chores or through discussion about how to take care of himself,
mm-hmm,
physically, how to care for himself, and slowly but surely begin to care for the environment around him, taking care of his room, taking care of his bed, taking care of whatever the place is that he occupies,
mm-hmm,
beginning to learn how to take care of his clothes, beginning to learn how to prepare his clothes, beginning to think about how to feed himself, especially to begin to do those things that might otherwise get pushed on to the women in the family or to the mom, if the mom is the one who's doing everything,
mm-hmm,
to begin to feel like he has a little bit of stake in and charge at what's going on without him, around him. And what's probably hidden within that is actually beginning to take care of himself emotionally.
Mm-hmm.
To work with boys about beginning to identify and vocalize their feelings, including the feeling of anger, which many of us shy away from or don't know how to deal with or are frightened with. But anger is just a feeling. It's not anything that automatically leads to violence. And if a boy sees that his anger produces a lot of effects that look like they lead to violence, he might learn to use that as the only way to get some attention, even if it's negative attention.
Mm-hmm.
But being able to identify the other feelings, touching boys in gentle ways to the extent that they're willing to be touched and with their ability to consent to being touched, being asked, can I touch you now? And then touching them lovingly. And not stopping touching them lovingly just because they grow older.
Mm-hmm.
Teaching them how to, or talking with them as young people about how they're feeling and what they're thinking about things. Paul and his partner Mickey and their family, they had two sons and a daughter, they started pretty early with the children having meetings where everybody in the house would get together and just talk about what's going on and talk about the week. And they would talk about any decisions that Paul and Mickey felt like everybody ought to have a hand in deciding. pretty early on. They worked with the children when the children wanted to ask for things like having a later curfew or being able to stay up later or watch more television. They trained them in how to research what they wanted to ask for and talk about it and try to explain it and try to give reasons for it. And then they would have a discussion trying to come up with a common agreement on what was going to happen. These are all practices of democratic values.
Mm-hmm.
Consensus building, everybody getting listened to, everybody getting heard, everybody's concerns being addressed even if they can't be met.
Disagreements being peacefully resolved. Right.
Yeah, it's really, and a crucial part of that is making sure that boys and girls get treated equally and see that each of them is getting treated and valued equally.
Mm-hmm.
That's a real contradiction for boys to see.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very important part of, you know, learning how to be young adults and citizens in the world.
I liked the connection that was made between coming up with, instead of focusing on, let's come up with some rules for the family, it's more, let's agree how we want to live.
Yeah.
That is just such good practice for boys being visionaries for the future of humanity, the planet, etc.
Yeah, that's really hard work, too. Mm-hmm. I mean, one doesn't want to add any work to parents. Parents are completely overworked and do not get the resources we need to do this stuff. And moreover, a lot of parenting, a lot of caring, as we know, still know, women are doing second shifts. It's still the case that women are doing most of the emotional work and most of the physical labor
mm-hmm.
in most of our houses. And because of the state of heterosexual relationships and marriages, it's also often the case that women are doing this by themselves as single moms.
Mm-hmm.
And that we cannot add anything that is going to add more work for moms, not to mention blame moms, like forever it has happened in this society. Moms get blamed for what happens with mm-hmm. children. We really have to stop that entirely and figure out how to support mothers and fathers to do this collectively, both in their relationships with each other and in relationships with their children.
Mm-hmm.
That's not easy.
Mm-hmm.
That takes a lot of work and a lot of attention, and it absolutely requires parents to have a little break and talk about how this brings up feelings for them and the things they didn't get as children and what they get upset of and how they would like to really do this to their children. And then take a breath and then get back into it.
This underscores, you know, the need for society, you know, transformation of society basically is what's required to help support the family and parents.
But you can do that right there mm-hmm. in your living room. You can start on that right there.
You're training the future, right?
I mean, another way to go at this, to think about this, is boys have a lot of interests.
Mm-hmm.
Sports is one obvious interest that has some powerful good things and some powerful bad things going on with it. But there are also lots of other parts of boys' lives that may not be getting the attention. They could. Creative sides.
Mm-hmm.
Sides having to do with art
mm-hmm.
and music or writing or talking or debating or performing or dancing.
So
if we can open up some mm-hmm. of the spectra of possibilities that are there for boys and give them a chance to feel out these different ways that they can be boys as mm-hmm. opposed to sort of the direction that the Act Like a Man box takes.
Mm-hmm.
That really improves things all the way around. It's sort of an additional part to taking care, inviting boys to, training boys how to take care of themselves and notice all the differences within themselves,
mm-hmm.
not just this kind of monolithic act like a man thing they're supposed right. to be directed toward.
Mm-hmm.
Another part is to really talk to them about yourself and your own family and where your family comes from and where their relatives come from and mm-hmm. what their family histories are.
Mm-hmm. And being
another
honest.
Is to invite them into getting connected with the natural world around them, to bring home flowers and ants and sticks and stones and talk about them and notice what they're seeing. Give them chances to be outside. Give them
right.
chances to do a lot of physical activity, to run off steam and get a lot of breaks like that.
I do believe it's very important that we help our children to see the interconnectedness, the interdependency between humans and other life forms in the planet. And by orienting children to the natural world early, you can use that as a building block, it's a great way to get children involved in social action activities. You know, this connection to the what they love, they will protect. And by also giving them a sense of our connection to other life forms, animals, for instance, it helps to give children a sense of empathy and responsibility. So,
which is really crucial for everybody, but particularly for boys.
Mm-hmm.
To really feel like I have a connection with my pet over the plant they're getting me to raise, or mm-hmm. the how my block is going to look during the day, mm-hmm. and how the seasons change and how my body changes. These are really important and wonderful things for boys to learn about, as well as girls.
The cyclical nature, the patterns and cycles. Mm-hmm. You know, also getting in touch with the environment is a great way also to help boys explore spirituality, you know, that connection to something beyond themselves, because spirituality seems to be, you know, an important aspect of being a human being.
Yeah, and we all have it. However, it gets passed on to us as adults, all of us. I think that's one thing that's true about babies early on. They sure learn about connection pretty fast, because you got to have connection as a baby.
Mm-hmm.
But as we grow up as children and young adults, there are all kinds of mostly unspoken movements and feelings and connections we may have to feeling something larger than us. This is presented to us, of course, in all kinds of forms of institutionalized religions.
Mm-hmm.
Some may fit for some boys, not for others, and religion may not fit at all. But paying attention to it and giving it attention and supporting boys to think about things like this and to have experiences of awe and excitement,
mm-hmm.
and sort of being things, outside themselves now and again, sort of beyond the boundaries of the self,
right.
is a really important part of what it means to be a boy. It was certainly what it means to be a girl as well, but to be a boy and to grow up, to get that feeling. It's going to come regardless. I think it comes with us as a legacy of being human, but it can get shaped pretty badly by they act like a man box if we can't figure out ways to dismantle that a little bit.
Amen. You know, another important connection while we're on that subject is, you know, in this society we have a false idea of the lone hero. You know, we're all raised, you know, to go after our dreams and to be these kind of singular units. And it's very important to connect boys to our extended family, because we need to make that very clear, you know, how human beings truly are successful, how we truly survive, is due to many of these connections with other people. It's not an individual pursuit.
You know, I think the boys really like hearing about that and finding out about that. Sometimes it's hard with an extended family. We're living in a...
Mm-hmm.
21st century kind of American environment where extended family kind of gets separated and pushed away for many groups in any case. And the elders get removed and hidden from sight. And that's a really hard thing for children in general, and certainly for boys. So finding those relatives, finding same-age relatives, pretty wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
Finding those connections that sort of establish where things were before I got here and where they might go now, giving me a sense of some kind of participation in a process is a pretty important thing.
Mm-hmm.
Boys, it is the case that by the time they're 10, 11, and 12 years old, they will be moving away from you if you're their parent, as they'll be moving deeply into the society of peers and youth culture, in which you're not going to have a lot of control over what's happening with them by then.
Mm-hmm.
What you can do is train them critically to be able to assess what's going on and to become as available as you can be in that process for them to talk to and check things out.
A true ally.
Yeah.
We're going to need to take a quick break. Back to Membership Central.
We have a lot of people to thank. Michelle Renewing and Katie calling all the way from Yakima, Washington. Katie is a new member calling from Yakima, Washington. She heard this show and she said, yes, I want to join. If you want to join too, we have one book left. But you can only get it in the next 15 minutes by calling 503-232-8818. That book is Boys Will Be Men. It's a how-to guide to raise your sons, raise the children to be courageous, caring, and with community.
And we want to especially note that Alan has given a gift membership to Kira. And we thank you, Alan, and we would hope maybe a few more of you would think about a gift membership and give us a call at 503-232-8818 or 1-877-500-KBOO.
And I want to read this note because it's really sweet. Actually, Alan has given a gift membership to Kira, and Kira is the newborn. And what a legacy to give a membership in the name of a child to do something for the future. This is KBOO's Bread and Roses, bringing to you some great tips on parenting, on raising boys to be men who will be courageous, caring with community. You can call and get our last book that we have available tonight, 503-232-8818. It's your last chance to get this book on the show as a thank you gift by calling in. So 1-877-500-5266. Again, we've gotten calls from Yakima and other places throughout the Portland metro area. So give us a call.
You know, Paul Kibble and Alan Creighton, by putting this book together, have done what feminists have wanted men to do for so long, that is to take care of their own stuff. As a women's studies instructor, I'm often asked, why isn't there a men's studies? And I'm usually asked that by men, and I say, because you haven't created it yet. And with this book, I guess I can no longer say that, because in fact, these two men, Alan and Paul, are creating it. I know there are other men who are creating it, but women cannot do the work of men. Men have to do their own work, and with this book, it's a really, really important piece of that work. So if you want to be a part of supporting learning about this and supporting those efforts, because patriarchy hurts everyone, as we know, it hurts women and men differently, but there's no question that it hurts us all, give us a call so we can keep this kind of programming on the air. It's 503-232-8818. We want to thank Alan and Paul for their courageous efforts at getting this word out, and not only talking about the issue, but suggesting some real tools for addressing it.
If you're wondering, how much is this going to cost you? How about $10 a month? That's $120 that'll go to KBOO. $12 a month, $144 that KBOO will get. This is a tax-deductible donation. So if you're thinking about those taxes and the write-offs and what can you do about that, well, here's an answer, 503-232-8818. We got some incredible thank you gifts. When you call in, just ask the person, you know, hey, you know, I was thinking about getting a gift and giving it to somebody. So we have different books. We have political CDs. We have a CD, actually, with Cindy Sheehan and Dr. Helen Caldicott, Calvin Trillin, and others. For each CD is a $60 annual pledge. It's $5 a month out of your checking account, and you can get those CDs. So 503-232-8818. Greg just called in, and he is calling all the way from San Francisco. That's Greg Pescar calling in from
San Francisco.
So we've had Yakima, Washington, and San Francisco, California. Again, this is great programming brought to you by your community radio station. How do we create community? We create it by donating to the this station. We've brought you all evening some news that you won't hear anywhere else, Counterspin, and now Bread and Roses. Again, how do you create community? You do it by raising children in a great way. You do it by helping to stop the war, and you can help stop the war by donating to KBOO. We're $15,000 behind goal. So, and we know only 10% of the listeners out there are actually making pledges to KBOO. And we know that you can keep it positive here. Keep us on the air by calling 503-232-8818, 1-877-500-5266.
And And just one more time, we want to thank Michelle, who renewed, Katie, who got a new membership, Greg, who got a new membership, April, who renewed, Jasmine, who got a new membership, Christina, who got a new one, and Alan, who renewed. We thank all of you. You know, when we talk about creating community, I was just talking about this in one of my classes the other day, the community really is no longer defined by location, but rather by the world of ideas and how you connect with one another within those ideas that you want to bring to fruition in the world. And KBU is one way we bring those ideas to one another. So, to become part of that effort or to continue it, make sure that you call us at 503-232-8818 and become a member today.
And one special thanks I do have to give to Kira. She's a newborn, and I want her to have a wonderful world. Thank you for calling KBU, 232-8818.
Welcome back to Bread and Roses. We're finishing up with Alan Creighton, social justice and violence prevention health educator at UC Berkeley. Tonight, we're talking about how do we raise boys to express the full spectrum of human emotions and responses, boys that feel connected to the natural and spiritual world, able to take care of themselves as well as others, who are engaged members in the community with an understanding of the socio-political economic systems that we live within, and most importantly, are committed to social justice. That's a pretty tall order. It's going to take a whole society. It's all of our responsibility. Alan, do you have any closing thoughts for our audience?
Well, just quickly to say one tiny thing. I think the Pledge Drive person said that I edited the book, and that's actually not true. I'm one of the many readers in the book, and the acknowledgments, it's Paul's process and our process to involve lots of people, including lots of women, in reading this book and vetting it and making sure it was saying the right, some of the right things. So just to say that, I think holding boys and holding men accountable and expecting things from us is a really crucial contradiction to the idea that men are just going to take the world apart and bring it down. Now, it's true that men have been pretty involved, and wealthy men in particular, and wealthy white men in particular, have been involved in setting up a world that is killing us. It's very important for us not to give up on boys, or not to translate boys into those men, but not only to have high expectations of us, but to hold us accountable for those expectations. I think sometimes, like in the batterers programs, the men who come into the batterers programs actually really want somebody to notice what they're doing and hold them accountable. I think boys really want to be seen, and if they knew how to ask for it, they'd want to be seen and be held accountable in different ways than they are told the lone warrior way talked about earlier. And one of the really crucial parts of this is learning to fight for equality of women, to understand, for boys and young men to understand that they have a real personal stake in equality for women, their own lives and their own well-being, their own safety and security is dependent on making sure that we keep aiming for this equality and fighting for it and getting with other guys to do it. There is nothing, anyway, in my mind these days, nothing quite so beautiful as a group of young guys getting up, and you can see this all over the country, and saying, no, we're not going to put up with this anymore. We can't be having this. We're going to have it be this way. This is not what being a strong man is. Being a man that talks about feelings and supports women and supports our sisters and supports each other, not afraid of touching a man in public, and is fighting for social justice, that's what it's all it's supposed to look like. When you start getting leadership like that, you just want to go with it. And it's not only possible, but younger generations of people are doing it right now all over. We know they're doing it all over Portland. KBU is a really favorite station for Paul and me. We know there's lots of action going on there. There's certainly a lot going on in the Bay Area. Your station itself and your show itself is a real example of how it's going on. Sometimes we can get a little tired and a little overwhelmed with all the violence that many of us personally have experienced and the inequality that's going on racially and by gender and sexual orientation and the rest of it, and forget that locally lots and lots of people are fighting back, beginning right from the cradle.
Right on.
And that we can really do this thing, because we are doing this thing. And if you have a group of young boys getting up there and doing that and taking equal chances with women, it's absolutely irresistible. It's better than any Hollywood E-show star performance is going to get you. Mm-hmm. It's just a beautiful thing. And we can really pin our hopes on that and expect that it's going to happen.
Alan, thank you so much. I want to thank you for being our guest and also for your very important work that you've been doing for the last 30-some-odd years.
My pleasure.
I'd like to go out with a little song. I'd like to dedicate this to my 5 nephews. They're my personal projects to help them to rediscover their humanity. And this also goes out to all my brothers out there, you magnificent men and human beings, and you know who you are. This is Morrissey with Used to Be a Sweet Boy. Good night.
Used to make all of our trials.